Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Monday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Oxygen Community Studios, which is once again located here in Ahwatukee at Gambo's house. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the aforementioned one and only John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what is going on, my friend? Man. What is going on?
Did yesterday strike you as a football-type Sunday with everything that
was going on? It reminded me of a fall weekend. You know, we always, in our industry, right, we have a lot of our weekends are, half the year we get to spend our weekends the way we want to. But during the fall, September, October, November, December, when there's college football on Saturday, NFL on Sunday, you tell your wife, hey, listen, have fun. Here's the credit card. Go. Like, I'm not going to see you for 5 months because you're tied in. You're tied into not only the Cardinal game, but other NFL games on Sunday. And then college football, you got ASU, you got U of A, you got national games. So the fall has always been that really super busy time for us.
Yes.
Yeah, yesterday was like a fall weekend.
And it felt so good.
Well, after four months of watching, Chicago PD, Chicago Fire, New Amsterdam, The Resident. I mean, I can't even tell you how many shows me and my wife just binge-watched because there's nothing on.
I mean, I was giddy. I was giddy in the morning, and I was telling my wife this. Over coffee, I'm like, I can't wait until 11 because I'm just going to go upstairs and I'm going to camp out. And from 11 until 1:30, I'm going to watch the Coyotes. And then from 1 until 4, I'm going to watch the D-backs. And I'm going to take a little break, jump in the pool, grill some steaks. And then from 6 until 8:30, I'm going to watch the Suns. And it's going to be like a Sunday during football season where it's, okay, this is what I'm going to do today. And, yeah, you're right. Every now and then – it gets a little fatiguing during football season. It's a lot. Not that I expect anyone to feel bad for us. We have the best jobs in the world. But because you're right, 4.5 months of not having it, and then suddenly to have a day like yesterday, it was fantastic. And then to have it cap off the way it did is our top story of the day today on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in.
Out top it comes, three-pointer won't go, long rebound, the game's over, Suns win, and a great comeback from behind for this Phoenix Suns team, and they win this ball game.
Bad news for the Mavs!
I'm telling you, you and Jordan are going to have to rethink plan on that one.
It was bad.
Why should we rethink it? They're successful without it. We're jinxing it if we now change the protocol.
Right.
All right.
We'll say it now. It was bad news for the Mavs. What a game. What an exciting, action-packed, thrilling game. But I just want to tell everybody, Ricky Rubio is going to join us at 3 o'clock. Ricky Rubio, one of the key players in the game last night. Suns get a big win over the Mavericks. They're 2-0 in the bubble. They're making some noise. They're getting noticed. The bench was outstanding. They had to beat the refs and the Mavs last night. I mean, the fans have called on Mikal Bridges, with foul. I think it was either foul number 4 or 5 with Doncic. He never touched him.
No, he never touched
foul. And I'm like, watch the replay. Watch it again. Watch it a third time. My God, he's never touched him. Like, their body's never touched. Foul. I was like, man, yeah, they were down 15. And it just seemed like I was just watching that game for the sake of having to watch it. And then they started to come back. And Javon Carter and Cameron Payne and Cam Johnson, they started to get hot from three. And the next thing you know, they took the lead. And I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Here come the Suns.
Yeah, and that was the amazing part about yesterday. I mean, there was a lot of amazing things about yesterday's game. But in the third quarter, when Ayton picks up his fifth, about a minute and a half later, Booker picks up his fifth, and you're thinking, okay, that's it. That's it. I mean, with this bench, you're going to tell me campaign is going to be the reason why they come back? You're going to tell me that Frank Kaminsky and Javon Carter are going to be the reasons why they come back in this game against the Dallas Mavericks? Not this bench. This bench has been deficient all year long. But with Ricky Rubio, who, as you mentioned, is going to be joining us at 3 o'clock, with him the maestro running the show, recognizing that he, not even so much looking for his shot, but just in terms of how he ran that team in that third quarter. And to be honest, let's call it like it is, the shot making that they had in that third quarter, three guys, Payne, Saric, and Carter. In the second half of yesterday's game, most of this came in the third quarter. 5 of 8 from the three-point line, 10 of 17 from the floor, and it was just three after three after three. And with, miraculously, they got the Suns right back in that game.
So Ayton goes to the bench with 8:25 left in the third quarter. Mavs are up 79-68. They're up 11. Ayton's on the bench. Right after they cut it to 79-70, Booker goes to the bench. No Booker, no Ayton. And you're right. Javon Carter, three-pointer. Cam, three-pointer. Cam, corner three. Javon, three-pointer. Payne, three-pointer. Payne, three-pointer. Back-to-back threes by Payne. At that point, the Suns are up 96-90. Mikal Bridges picks up the fourth foul. And then the quarter ends with the Suns up 96-92. But you are exactly right. It was Javon. It was Cam. It was Cameron Payne, who is establishing himself as a real option to be one of the point guards on this roster for next year.
Big time.
Establishing himself as one of those guys. He's playing, and Ty Jerome is not.
Yeah, big time. Here's Rubio, Ricky Rubio, who, again, will join us a little bit later. But as he said last night, the bench players were from tremendous.
Amazing. We had a fall trouble, and they came in ready to step up. We talked at the halftime that we didn't bring the juice in the first half. And with the foul trouble with EA and Book, I think they step up big, huge contribution. And that is what a playoff team does. Sometimes the starters got to bring it. Sometimes the bench help when starters don't have their night. But
yeah, the bench helped big time in that game last night. But you know what? Credit to Ricky Rubio, too. In the second half of that game, he was a plus 17 in the plus minus. I mean, with Booker, and I'm going to give it up to Booker, too. All right. Devin Booker, in that fourth quarter, they brought him in with, what, about 9 minutes left to go, and he was on the floor until there was about a minute and a half left. Devin Booker did, for the most part, what superstars are supposed to do. He put that team on his back in that fourth quarter, and every single time they needed a bucket, he got him one.
The biggest play to me was his awareness to get a – late in the game, to get fouled on a three-point play, to lean his body into – I forgot who was guarding him – pick up the foul. Then he goes to the free throw line and knocks down all three free throws. They won the game at the free throw line. Ayton made one out of two. Rubio made three. I mean, yeah, Booker made three, and then Rubio made two. If you go, wasn't baskets being made at the end of the game. It was free throw, free throw, free throw, free throw, free throw, free throw. You got to win games like that.
Yes.
And they made 3, 5, 6 out of seven down the stretch to win that game.
Yeah. Booker, in the second half of that game yesterday, I don't know why, you just keep looking at the second half box score, because to me, that tells the tale of this game in many, many ways. Devin Booker played 11 minutes in the second half. He had 11 points in the second half. So he was a point-per-minute guy in the second half, and the bulk of that obviously coming in the fourth quarter. Rubio was huge in the second half, and how about the Mavs? 1 of 18 from the three-point line.
Terrible.
In the second half of that game. And clearly, and they were making a point of this during the broadcast, clearly the Mavs were going for the win.
They didn't want overtime.
They were not interested in tying and going into OT.
And they could have tied any time they wanted, just tell Luka to go get a layup, because that was the easiest basket of the night for anybody. Luka driving and getting a layup. They took two three-point attempts at the end. Porzingis, and then Hardaway Jr., who had an awful game. He was 1 for 12 shooting. 11 of those missed shots were 8 three-pointers. 8 times he shot a three and he missed it. So they went with Porzingis and Hardaway Jr. to get the three. They just didn't want to go to overtime right there. So that, you know, you take that with a grain of salt. I don't know. The Mavs weren't trying to win that game at the end. They were trying to win it at the end and not go to overtime. So you could ask yourself the question, were they really trying to win? They did not want another overtime game. They can't move anywhere in the standings. They're stuck with the 7th seed. So to them, I think Carlisle's like, I'm going to just try to win the game with a three. And then when I got the ball back with 3.2 seconds, I'm going to try to win the game with a three. So they didn't, you know, if this was a playoff game, they would, and if it's a playoff game, Booker's out. Ayton's got five. Mikhail's got five. They're going overtime. They are going to overtime if that's a playoff game. Mm-hmm. So you got to take that into the context. But either way, Suns got a nice win. That's a very good win for the Phoenix Suns. They're 2-0 in the bubble.
Yeah, Monty Williams, and I promise you, we're not going to stray away from the Suns very far because we're going to talk about sort of what this means, big picture, coming up in just a minute. But Monty talked about managing the emotions of this game.
You have two guys like Book and D.A. with foul trouble. You're trying to manage the game as best you can for the guys who are out there in moments that, you know, they haven't been in with this group. And so my emotions were just, you know, trying to stay as level-headed as I could so that I could, you know, make good decisions for, you know, campaign. JC, those guys came in and gave us a heck of a boost. And I'm in the mode of, you know, I want to enjoy it for about 20 minutes and now I'm on to the next. You know, that's the mentality I have to have in this situation. It's a big-time win. I want the guys to enjoy it, but I got to get back and break down film and get ready for tomorrow. It's 11:53 here, so it's pretty late for a basketball game, but I'm thankful we won.
And tomorrow, it's 1 o'clock game against the Clippers. We actually have some news about that game that we'll have coming up in just a moment, who may or may not play for the Clippers in that game. News about an upcoming Suns opponent who may or may not play in that game. Things have gotten off to a very good start, but more
Lou
than
Williams anything, isn't playing, is he?
Well, that's yeah. Possibly not. Seriously,
there was a stripper from the infamous
Magic City,
the place,
the chicken wing restaurant. That
he wasn't there just to get chicken wings. She kind of said that
little leg.
Yeah, he was definitely there more for the legs than the thighs than the chicken wings. Yeah, there was this was on Twitter. Somebody got in touch with one of the dancers. Yeah, he wasn't there just to get.
Well, I'll tell you right now.
He wasn't there just for takeout.
Since I was going to tease it ahead of the next segment, I'll just tell everybody now. that Gambo, Sarah, as always, was a sledgehammer.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Lou Williams is questionable to play tomorrow for the Clippers. He is questionable for that game. But when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the odds are still razor thin. And I don't know if anybody on the show believes that, okay, they're going, but everything that's needed to happen so far has happened for the Phoenix Suns. What does it mean? We'll tell you next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Every game, everything we do is high level, high focus, we hope. And we're trying to do everything we can to give our guys a chance to be successful in games. And so, yeah, it reminds me a lot of the playoffs and the national team when I was with the USA team. So we're trying to take advantage of it.
Monty Williams today, after the Suns beat the Dallas Mavericks yesterday 117-115 to improve to 2-0 so far in the bubble. And even though Gambo, it's early in the process, and even though the schedule is very, very daunting for the Phoenix Suns, and it's just going to get even harder tomorrow, they're taking on the LA Clippers, and they might be a favorite to win the championship in the NBA. Certainly one of three favorites to win a championship.
Yeah, but are they playing for anything?
They throttled the Pelicans over the weekend.
They did.
They shot like 57% from the three-point
Pelicans
line.
Pelicans are 0-2.
Yes, but our friends over Bright Side of the Sun, and they pointed this out in a blog post today. So far, every single outcome, if you're a Suns fan, that you would have desired in this bubble has been achieved. Every single one.
Okay, you want to go over them?
I do. Memphis is 0-2. The Blazers are 1-1. One of those games came against Memphis. The Pelicans are 0-2. The Spurs are 2-0. Okay, so that I guess that hasn't technically.
Yeah, they're now two back from the eighth seed, San Antonio.
The Kings are 0-2, and the Suns are 2-0. So now as it stands right now, all right, the Spurs are two back of the Grizzlies. The Blazers are 2.5 back. The Pelicans and the Kings are both 3.5 back. And the Suns are within that magic number of four. They're four back.
But now they've got to pass Sacramento, New Orleans, Portland, and San Antonio.
Yes.
They have to pass those four teams. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. Now, when you entered the restart, the Grizzlies, Trailblazers, Pelicans, and Kings were 8, 9, 10, and 11. Those teams were combined 1-7 in the bubble. Let me say it again. The Grizzlies, Trailblazers, Pelicans, and Kings, the teams you just mentioned, they were 8, 9, 10, and 11. They're 1-7 in the games. The Spurs and the Suns were the 12 and 13 seeds. They're 4-0. So it's you're within the range, the margin for error of four games right now. Mm-hmm. But you have to pass Sacramento, New Orleans, Portland, and the Spurs. You are two back from the Spurs. You have to pass them.
Yes.
I don't know what would happen in a tie. I'd have to find out. I don't know. But you've got to get by, you know, you've still got four teams ahead of you. So you have to win. The Suns, by winning yesterday and beating the Mavs, they kept their hopes alive.
Yes.
They did. They kept their hopes. Now they got to keep winning. Could they afford to lose one game? Yeah, maybe. Maybe they can go 7-1. 6-2? I doubt it. 7-1? Possibly. You had a magic number thing that you sent out to me today.
Yeah.
It was a little complicated, but I think I got it.
It's a lot complicated, and you know what? I'm going to spare everybody reading it on the air because it is tremendously complicated. But it's basically looking at every single team, Memphis, the Spurs, the Trailblazers, the Pelicans, and the Kings, and kind of what their magic numbers are for them to, in terms of wins for them to get in. It presumes the Suns are going to go 8-0. And then they say if the Suns don't go 8-0 and they end up going 7-1, then subtract everyone else's magic
by
number
one
by one game. You know, so it points out how difficult it's still going to be. Now, if the Suns, this time tomorrow, they play the Clippers at 1 o'clock. Lou Williams is questionable, as I mentioned a second ago. If the Suns can pull off a win against the L.A. Clippers.
Now we're talking.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, and I wanted to wait three games.
Yeah. Now you'll start to see people
go. Well, because you'll probably move past somebody.
Uh-huh, yeah.
If you win against the Clippers, you will probably move past either New Orleans or Sacramento. Probably. You're only, maybe you move past both of them. And now all of a sudden, if you could get within a game or so of the 9 seed, you'll feel a lot better. But, you know, to me, like, I didn't want to get too excited after the first two games. And I said, I will really look at this stuff after three, but because these other teams are 1-7,
yes,
it's fair to look at it now.
Yeah,
it's fair.
I don't think it's fair to think that it's going to happen. I don't think it's fair to assume that it's going to happen. I think it's fair, and I agree with you. I was, you know me, we were sitting here in your office on Friday, and we were watching, was it the Blazers-Memphis game, right?
Yes.
Was that Friday or Thursday? I think it was Friday.
Yes.
And
one of those.
Yeah,
days.
One of those. They all kind of.
I remember watching
right, they it. They all kind of bleed into each other right now, I'll admit it. And, you know, I paid attention to some of those games, but in terms of really thinking about what it meant, I really didn't start doing any of that thinking about it until last night after the Suns win, and then you start to look around and you realize that everybody else is kind of opening the door. Now, you have Lou Williams. He's questionable. Dennis Schroeder of the Oklahoma City Thunder, he has left the bubble to go be with his wife, who's expecting their first child.
So he will not be available for the Suns game.
Suns play the Thunder 1 week from today. So that's another top player from a team who may or may not be available. We already know the Pacers are in there, too. They ended up getting Oladipo back.
I don't know if it matters the way T.J. Warren was playing the other day.
Oh, my goodness. 53 Woo! Points over the weekend?
T.J. Warren
holy
went off.
Folks. But you know what? I think right now we can sit here and look at all of these scenarios and say, okay, yes, so to your point, so far, everything has broken their way. It doesn't mean they're going to get in, but everybody's off to a great start when it comes to the Suns. The one thing I think you and I both wanted the most from this was to see the Suns take this opportunity seriously.
Oh, 100%.
And on that front, they have delivered
Check.
In spades.
Check the box.
Yes.
Yeah, did they come into this? Woe is me. Oh, we're just here for fodder. We're just here to, you know, play these other No, they came in to win games. Their mindset was right. Monty got them ready, and they have played extremely well.
Yes.
Like, you have to be – listen, every win they get, like, it's possible they could end up with 30 wins this year in a season where they don't play 82 games. And that's what we all wanted from the get-go was, oh, just get into the 30s. Mm. Stop being a team that's in the 20s. Because the Suns right now have 28 wins. If they get two wins in their next six games, they've got 30 – you know, and they're going to play a total of – let me see, 30 – 39 plus 6 is 45, 55, 65, 73 games they're going to play, 73. If they could get to 30 wins when only playing 73 games, I mean, that's you know, it's improvement. I said to you right from the get-go, I think the fact that they got into this bubble was a victory. Just the fact that they got in.
Yes.
And they're not one of the eight teams that's sitting at home, twiddling their thumbs, watching the games on TV.
And there were some people who were concerned, and I agree with you, there were some people who I think were concerned that they were not going to take advantage of this opportunity that they've been given by playing hard.
They were wrong.
By you know, woe is me, oh, we don't have any chance. They were wrong. They were. The Suns have taken every opportunity for granted. They have taken advantage of every opportunity they've been given during this. If you're scoreboard watching, the two games you want to keep an eye on today, the Grizzlies are taking on the Pelicans. That's at 3:30 Arizona time.
All right, okay? So who do you want to win?
I think you want the Grizzlies to win. I think. Because you want
you've got to get within four of them.
But right now you want to leapfrog teams, right? You want to jump in front of those teams. You want to jump ahead of those teams in front of you.
Okay.
My guess is you want to get ahead of the Pelicans.
I think either way it's good news for the Suns.
And then the Spurs,
to be honest with you, I think either way it's good.
I mean, yeah, you just
because if Memphis loses, you now
you are a little bit closer.
You're a little bit closer to that.
But you still have four teams you have to jump.
Yeah.
The Spurs are taking on the 76ers this afternoon at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, so you desperately want Philly to win.
And one other thing, real quick, Patrick Beverley of the LA Clippers on the Phoenix Suns, quote, I think they're one of the thirstier teams here. Their coaching staff has them playing at a very high level.
That is a big word used in the NBA.
Thirstier?
Thirsty. No, thirsty.
Thirsty?
It is a big word. He's thirsty. They're thirsty. I hear it so much.
Yeah.
I never heard it before in my life, but I hear it a lot now. Thirsty.
Except when you're actually thirsty?
That guy's thirsty.
Like,
not for Gatorade. Like he's thirsty for
pretzels are making me thirsty.
Yeah, not that type of thirsty.
Not that kind of thirsty, no. Okay. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show. So while the Suns have fans in the Valley excited and rejuvenated about their bubble games, the Diamondbacks, not very exciting and not very rejuvenating. That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll presented by Sanderson Ford.
Sarah Cazell joins us back there from the North Phoenix branch of the Auction Community Studio. She has today's Twitter poll question of the day. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. How's it going, guys?
Oh, good. Man, yesterday was fun. I enjoyed yesterday.
It was energizing.
It was energizing, and it sounds like we just got another one like it tomorrow with triple header in store. Coyotes, yes. Suns, D-backs.
And Mercury as well.
And
four
Mercury,
teams.
Thank you. I do not mean to overlook the Mercury.
Oh, I know.
They play tomorrow as well.
I know. I got you.
All right. So what's our poll question today, Sarah?
All right, guys. We are focusing in on the Phoenix Suns, the hot start that you guys were just talking about. 2-0 now in the NBA bubble. So I want to know, have your expectations changed at all for Phoenix after those first two wins?
Oh, this is really good.
Thank you.
And that's not my question. That's
that's how you know it's
that
real.
That is really a good question.
Then it is really good.
It's a all right. Give me the options.
Yes. So here are the three options for you guys to vote on. Yes, my expectations have changed. I expect more wins now. No, I already expected a good run out of the Suns. Or yeah, they got off to a hot start, but there are more losses coming.
I don't think that I expect more now.
Okay.
I think I'm option two. I did you expect a good four and four be a good run for a team?
For a team that's
I'm
gonna vote for that. Because I don't believe in hot start. Well, I mean I do believe in that too. Hot start, more losses coming. They're not gonna go 8-0.
No.
Sure.
No. But
like a slew of losses. I'm limited with characters in these polls. So basically the final option is like, yeah, okay, they won the first two games, but like don't get used to it.
I'm going to go for option two.
Me too.
Option two.
I just voted option two.
What's our audience say?
Fabulous. That is where most of our voters are as well. 42% of them said, no, my expectations have not changed. I expected wins from the Suns. 31% said, good start, but I think they're going to start losing some games. And then 27% say, yes, my expectations are now heightened.
All right. So everybody kind of split evenly among that. Thanks for that poll question. It was a good one. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. One word, at Burns and Gambo.
And a fly ball to right center. On the run out there is Calhoun. He'll have to play it off the wall. He won't. It's into the pool. An opposite field home run for Mookie Betts, and it's 3-0 L.A.
Remember how we were talking on Friday about how nice it would be if the Diamondbacks could take three or four from the L.A. Dodgers and build some confidence back up, maybe get themselves back into a race somewhere?
Did we say that?
We did. Yeah, we did. And you know what? The exact opposite happened. The exact opposite of what we said. We didn't say it was going to happen. We weren't predicting it. We were just being hopeful. The exact opposite of what we were hoping for happened. The Diamondbacks dropped three of four to the Dodgers over the weekend. They are a Christian Walker bases loaded double in the eighth on Friday night away from getting swept by LA.
This is completely unexpected. This is a talented roster, a talented lineup. And I know D-back fans are frustrated. I understand that. I'm frustrated too. 27 runs in three games, pathetic. Two home runs on the season in 10 games, pathetic. 3-7 record, pathetic. This is not, this baseball team is not this bad. They're much better than this. Very rarely do you see this many guys get off to such a poor start all at one time. Lamb's batting 063, Ahmed 065, Escobar 132, Vargas 158, Calhoun 167, Peralta 182. They have seven players batting under 183.
Yeah.
Like this, come on, we Escobar's a better player than that. Peralta's a better player than that. Ahmed's a better player than that.
He's better than that.
They're all like, it sucks because it's a decent lineup. I mean, in my case, it put together a good baseball team. And so it's frustrating. You know, it's frustrating that so many guys at the same time are off to a bad start. Because I expected this team to be a playoff team. Mm-hmm. And now I'm seriously worried that they're not going to be.
Yeah, and in a normal 162-game season, if you get off to a 10-game start like this, it's no big deal. It's a blip. It's something that can very easily be overcome because you still have weeks and weeks and months to go. The 2020 Arizona Diamondbacks don't have weeks and weeks and months to go. They're 1/6 of the way through their season. Right? Their season is just about 20% over, okay? And so...
And the starting pitching has not been good.
It's
offense hasn't been good.
Yeah, it's been terrible.
And, you know, the bullpen's been decent, but, man, you know, Weaver on Saturday, they lost 11-2. Weaver got in so much trouble late in that game. He went four innings, and then in that fifth man, he just imploded. He's 0-2 with an ERA of 14.73.
Yeah.
Robbie Ray and Madison Bumgarner, they've lost all four starts that Madison Bumgarner and Robbie Ray have pitched in. Like,
Zach Gallen pitched well Friday.
He did. He pitched well.
And Merrill Kelly, I thought, pitched decent enough to get a win yesterday.
He pitched fine. Merrill Kelly was good.
Six innings,
he's been their best
pitcher. Yeah, I mean, he's been their best guy. Troy Lovello yesterday after the loss to the Dodgers 3-0 says, these are grinding times and we're working through it.
These are grinding times right now. And this is these are tests. These are tests for our team and our players, and we're going to keep fighting. That's all we know how to do. We're gonna grind through these tough times. We know that better days lie ahead, but to get there, we gotta you know, accomplish some things, and piece by piece and day by day, we gotta keep working. Accept that coaching, and then they're gonna go out there and perform and play up to their capabilities.
I mean, look, if we really break this down, you look at the starting rotation. Two of the five have been really, really bad so far, Weaver and Ray. Mad Bum's been okay. Gallen had a rough first start, but he was good in his second.
And Kelly's been good. Yeah.
This is all on the off. Not all. This is 90%, in my opinion, on the offense right now. And the immense pressure they're putting on everyone else to be perfect every single time they go out there, whether it's starting pitcher, whether it's a reliever, you've got zero margin for error to work with when, as a team, you're hitting .192. You're hitting .192 on the season. The Dodgers just hit 11 home runs in a four-game series as a team all season long. The Diamondbacks have two home runs all year.
How do you beat nobody
with that?
How do you explain that?
I don't know.
I mean, it's unreal. You know, They franchise lows in every category. Hits, home runs, batting average, slugging percentage, OP, everything. Two home runs in 10 baseball games? That's almost an impossibility.
Yeah.
To only have two home runs in 10 baseball games. To have this many guys, you know, Christian Walker's been their best hitter. He's been their best hitter. He's been consistent. Ketel Marte had one bad series. Starling Marte had one bad series. But to have seven guys batting below 183, I mean, it's mind-boggling that you could have that many guys playing so poorly at the same time.
Here's Christian Walker, who believes when it clicks, it's going to be special.
I feel like for what this team has and what we're capable of, it's going to be a matter of one game or one time through the lineup where we understand how we all fit together and how we pass the baton to the next guy. And I do believe that when this thing clicks, it's going to be something that's very, very special.
I think it can be. I mean, I can't, you know, imagine, and we'll talk about this in the 3 o'clock hour. I mean, I can't imagine these slumps are going to last, you know, all 60 games. They have made some roster moves, right? They sent down Kevin Crone. They brought up Varsho. They brought up Andy Young. They sent Rojas down. These aren't earth-shattering moves. They're not. They're just little moves that are being made. Mm-hmm. But some of these guys are going to I mean, it's tough. Listen, I love Nick Ahmed because of how great he is defensively. It's tough to watch him strike out every time he comes to the plate. Every time. Every single time. It is very difficult to watch. I thought Nick had a little bit of a breakthrough year last year. And as good as he is defensively, he put some offense together. I mean, Escobar batting 132. Now, I remember, I was not concerned about Ketel Marte. I thought he would be fine. You know, Escobar had like a career year last year. But even at 132, like, this is not the player he is. He's a much better player than that.
Yeah, he's, you know, it's funny, of those six guys, I don't know why I keep getting drawn to Eduardo Escobar. Not as you know, and it's not just him, as you point out. It's Peralta, and it's Ahmed, and
Calhoun.
It's Cole Calhoun, who hasn't been very good. But for some reason, it's Eduardo Escobar that I just keep going back to when I look at that lineup every single day, because he's a guy who, based off of what he's done in the past, he is going to get a lot of rope and a lot of leash from Torrey Lovello.
He should.
And he is the one guy who has drastically underperformed in this lineup. Whereas the other guys, I mean, they have two, but for some reason, it's just more obvious with him, given the numbers that he's put up since he's been here. He's the one that's been, I think, the biggest disappointment.
But this guy's been in the big leagues for like 10 years. And last year, 35 homers, 118 RBIs. He's never come close to that.
No.
Ever. So I wasn't, Ketel Marte to me is going to be a star. Escobar had a career year last year. But even with that being said, I mean, he's usually a guy that'll hit 275 with 15 homers and 60 RBIs.
Right. Not like this.
Not like this.
When we come back, the Coyotes, the trifecta yesterday, and that 1-0 series lead over the Predators. And in large part, it's thanks to the biggest names they've got in the roster. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Baby, I'm howling for you. It was and you know what? Anybody who's a hockey fan knows, and Gambo, you know this. I count myself as a very casual hockey fan at best. But everybody who's a hockey fan knows that when you're in an elimination situation like that, that there are very rarely things more entertaining that you can watch sports-wise than a hockey game in the third period where that much is on the line. Every shift, every possession, every shot is filled with tension. I mean, it's riveting entertainment. And for the first time in a long time, now whether we're going to call it a playoff game or not, I don't know. I'm confused. I thought it wasn't, but they keep calling it a playoff game.
I mean, I'm not. There's 22 teams in this thing.
I know. But
to me, they have to win this series, and then they're in.
Because
then it'll be down to 8-8.
That's what I thought, too.
You got to win this, because the other top four teams are just playing for seedings.
But the NHL keeps calling these things playoff games.
I don't know. To me, it's a qualifier. It's a qualifier. They've got to qualify to get in.
Whatever it was, the last 20 minutes of that game yesterday.
Sure, intense.
Was intense.
Well, because they had the biggest goal of the game was the Grabner breakaway, the shorthanded goal. You know, Nashville's on the power play. They're down 3-1. Grabner goes in on a breakaway, scores 4-1. Three goal leads in the NHL, even today, very difficult to lose a game when you're up by three goals. So that was a big one, to get that one and to go up 4-1. But then Nashville came back. You know, they got a power play goal. They got an even strength goal. It's 4-3, and then you're just trying to hold on at that point. And Tok packed it in. They played good defense. Kemper was outstanding, and they were able to come away with a win. It just got scary when you're up 4-1. You feel like you got it in the bag, And then it's, next thing you know, it's 4-3, and you're trying to hold on for the victory.
Yeah, it quickly turned, and then watching that entire third period play out the way it did, it was incredibly tense. But 4-3, they win. Now, this is a best of five against Nashville. If they win this series, they're up one game to none, obviously. Game two is coming up tomorrow at 11 a.m. If they win this series against Nashville, then they advance to what we classically known as the playoffs, right? With 16 total teams, yes. Eight on each side. I thought all along we weren't calling these games playoff games, but I tell you, watching that game yesterday,
the atmosphere,
it felt like a playoff game, right?
That's sure.
And for not having anybody in that Edmonton arena, it felt, I mean, the intensity, it did not need a live audience to bring that intensity that you feel with playoff hockey. Here's Rick Tocchet after the game saying that, look, every guy on our roster right now has to be on their A game.
You got to handle pressure by going after the pressure. You know, Phil and Halsey and Debo, their line was great. I thought O was, outstanding. You could tell that he took charge a lot of the plays out there. Kemp's was great. So, we just can't have passengers. This team, we can't afford to have four or five, six guys not have their game. We need everybody to play, and those guys really, you're right, they brought it to a different level, and that's nice to see.
And by those guys he's referring to, and the question that he was asked, were sort of the more prominent players on this team. Phil Kessel, 2 points yesterday. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, now it hit five guys before it went in.
Fluke goal,
but he had the first goal. Clayton Keller scored the third goal of the game. Taylor Hall had 2 points as well in yesterday's. I mean,
need those guys to play well.
These are the premier players you expect to play well in moments.
Yeah,
like
because
this.
Listen, I mean, I fully expect that they are going to, in some ways, kind of blow this thing up after this year, and they're going to get rid of a lot of the veteran players that are making money. I think that they'll go cheaper over these next couple of years. I'm expecting a big salary cut, so this might be your best chance for a little while. I think they're going to go younger. I think that they'll move quite a few of these players. Now, you played without Schmaltz, so you lost the center, and that's their weakest. Up the middle is where they're weakest. So, to win a game. Look, Nashville is a decent team. They got a lot of offensive weapons, but they're not a great defensive team. Their goaltending's a little shaky. They're very beatable. Let me give you some numbers. Now, the NHL went away from best of fives, a while ago. They went away from them. But in best of five formats, the team that won the opener ended up winning 82% of the time in a best of five format. So, if you go back to when they had the best of fives, if you won game one, you won the series 82% of the time. Now, here's another one. In the 83 best of five series in the history of the NHL, 54 of those series see one team take a 2-0 lead. The only team that ever came back from a 2-0 lead, a deficit, was the Islanders in 85. So if you could win this next one and go up 2-0, only one time out of 54 times did a team come back from down 2-0.
It's like being
you put it in the bag.
3-1 in a baseball series or 3-1 in an NBA series or even an NHL series. It's just hard. It's hard to win four straight.
So
games.
You go out there and you win that one. Yeah. You win that, and there's no home ice advantage here anywhere. So it's not like Nashville's going home with home ice advantage. These are neutral site games.
Yeah, Rick Tocchet yesterday called it the loudest he's ever heard his team be.
You know, we're kind of a quiet team, and this is the loudest I've ever heard our team ever chirp each other, get in the game. And that's what you need. You need to rely on your teammate to get you that juice. You know, a guy makes a good hit, usually the crowd kind of gives you the instant gratification, but you're not getting it now. So you got to get it from your teammates. And I thought we were really good at that tonight. Since I've been here, it's the best I've ever heard our team. Obviously, I can hear them more because there's no crowd, but that really helps for sure.
And the people responded. We got a note from I saw this on Twitter, actually, from Brett Hansen over at Fox Sports Arizona. That was the most watched Coyotes game on Fox Sports Arizona.
Yeah, a long time.
2014.
Yeah, 6 years.
6 years since they had an audience that big on Fox Sports Arizona, and they'll do it again tomorrow. But when we come back,
I think the break did Kessel well.
You think so?
He looked fresher.
Yeah,
he needed that.
When we come back with their two best players in foul trouble, our next guest was able to rally the rest of the Suns roster in last night's win over the Mavs. What was the key to that win? Ricky Rubio. We'll ask him that question next on the Burns and Gambo Show.